everybody, and welcome back to another episode of the Portrait Session Podcast on the Improved Photography Network. My name is Connor Hibbs, and today I'm joined by Mr. Nick Page. How are you doing today, Nick?
I'm doing well. It feels like forever since I've been on. It's been a long time. Man. Yeah, but I've been keeping busy. I've been traveling. You know, I keep fairly busy. I've been traveling. Wedding season's kind of starting for me. Things are starting to pick up a little bit, so I've been doing well. Yeah.
Well, glad to hear it, man. I think that I might have informed everybody that you were traveling last week nice. on spring break with Zane. Is that right?
Yeah. It was his spring break. So we had started by going to the Oregon coast, and I had planned on traveling up and down the Oregon coast. And then I started seeing all of these Instagram photos of the California mega bloom with all the wildflowers.
Oh, yeah. The super bloom thing.
Yeah. So just on a whim, we like took off to Southern California. I was like, surprise, we're going to drive 15 hours down to Southern California. And we got down there and it was very beautiful, but I kind of underestimated just how long of a drive that is. So
dude, that is a really long drive.
Yeah. So we're down there and we're like, okay, so if we drive 700 miles today and 700 miles tomorrow and 500 miles the day after that, we'll be home in time. So it was a very long trip.
Dude, that's ridiculous. I've done the drive from Portland to Oregon down to San Francisco, and that's like maybe half that drive. Mm-hmm. That alone was... It was a very long drive.
So to give you an idea of how much I've been driving, I've owned my new car for a month, maybe. I think right around a month. And I've almost gone through a set of tires on it already. Like I bought a brand new set of tires when I first got it, and they're like half wore out probably. Like I've been driving a ridiculous amount.
Yeah, no, that's a little bit more than just a ridiculous amount. That's insane, man.
Yes. But I got to get it out of my system before wedding season starts. Cause once wedding season starts, I pretty much don't get to travel anymore ever again.
Yeah, I feel you there, man. Well, that's actually a really nice segue for us today, because
it's today, almost like I did that on purpose.
What a professional. That's all I can say. But today we're going to be talking about just little tips, things that we do before our busy season that, you know, once we're slammed with work all the time, we might not have the time to do. So this is right at the beginning of your wedding season. It's maybe 2 or 3 weeks out before I start really getting more portrait sessions coming in. The weather's just finally starting to warm up here in Colorado, and I'm assuming that it's kind of the same everywhere for the most part. But let's just get into this conversation. Nick, what is something that you do before you get too busy to take care of it? Yeah, just as a maybe like spring cleaning or, you know, something that you do while you have the time to.
Right. So one of the things that's kind of fresh in my mind is that usually the first wedding or the second wedding, I realize like how many batteries I have that are just at the end of their life. You know, when you're using speed lights all the time, you fly through the AA batteries. And I have like, you know, a huge assortment. I probably have like 70, maybe 50 to 70 rechargeable AA batteries. And the problem with my method that I've discovered this year is that they all get mixed together and they're not dated. So some of them are good, some of them are bad. And surprise, you don't find out until you're at a wedding using them and like you put brand new recharged batteries in and they kind of work for a few flashes and then they die. So it's really frustrating to discover that at the first wedding of the year or whatever. So I'm trying to test all of my AA batteries and throw away all the ones that are towards the end of their life. That way I can start the season fresh with batteries that will actually work for me. So I've been doing that a lot. And because I use third-party camera batteries, probably more than I should, I discover that I have to go through those because there's nothing more frustrating than slapping a new battery in, starting to take photos, and then 5 minutes later, your camera just dies. And you can't figure out what it is because it's obviously not the battery because I just put that thing in, and sure enough, it was the battery. It's just that you're using like a Wasabi brand battery, and it doesn't last as long. So checking all my batteries and getting rid of the bad ones, that's one of the spring cleaning things I do.
You know, and it sounds like it actually might be a pretty good idea for you as a battery user and anyone else using batteries to maybe once you have new batteries, label them in sets of some sort. Yes. Whether just get a silver Sharpie and write on the side of them just A, B, C, D, through all the way through the line, and just have different labeled sets so you know what batteries go with what, which, you know, who knows? You might end up mixing them up a bit here and there, but at least you have a decent idea to keep you organized and to know roughly when you've introduced new batteries into the mix that those batteries are new. And maybe even if you want to be really Erica Kaufman about things and organize, make a spreadsheet in which you maybe log something.
That's a whole new level. You start using them. That's a whole new level of OCD right there. So here's my mad scientist way that I've devised to deal with this is that every time I buy batteries, I'm going to buy a slightly different brand. So there's there's several different brands and they're all like pretty close. Like you have Nloop and then you have the really good Amazon batteries. And then I just saw a review where the Duracell ones are really good. So what I'm going to do is every time I buy batteries, I'm going to buy, you know, a fairly large number of them, like, you know, 24 batteries. And then every time I buy, I'm going to buy a different brand. That way I can keep all of the Nloops together, all the black Nloops together, all the white Nloops together, all of the Amazon ones together. And I know that I bought them all around the same time. So when the Amazon ones start to die, I'll just throw them all away and not have to deal with that anymore. So that's what I'm going to do is I'm going to switch brands.
Yeah. I mean, hey, that is forcing organization on a disorganized system right there.
Exactly. You know, because let's be honest, I'm not doing any spreadsheets for my batteries. Like I barely do it for my business. So battery spreadsheets, not in the cards for Nick Page.
It's something that you don't necessarily need to do for like a crazy amount of time. You just label all of your batteries and say batteries A through Z went into commission starting 2017.
But am I really going to sit down and bust out the label maker and label all of my AA batteries? That would take forever. Ain't nobody got time for that. So I'm just going to switch brands. That's the easiest way.
Hey man, whatever works for you. The operative phrase there was, would you do that? And of course, Nick Page would not do that. But for anybody else that might be a little bit more anal retentive about keeping track of things, which I would say is not a terrible idea.
Yeah,
that's an idea. That's an idea from somebody who doesn't use AA batteries because I shoot with strobes. Right. So I have two batteries and they're both good for a long time.
I know I've had this same conversation with Erica before about like, you know, preseason spring cleaning type stuff. And one of the things that she does that I should really start doing is sending all your gear in to get serviced and cleaned and repaired. During wedding season, you can't be without your main camera bodies. You can't be without your go-to lenses. And I keep saying wedding season, but during busy season, regardless what it is that you shoot. You can't be without those pieces of gear that you're using all the time. So during the off season or before that season starts, you need to take that time to service it. Even if that you're just cleaning your sensors yourself, you need to try to get that stuff done before you get busy. And then it just gets neglected. Cause I know my stuff is filthy at the end of a wedding season, like all the outdoor weddings and senior portraits that I do out in dust. Like, you know, my stuff is awful.
Yeah, man. I mean, it gets the same way here. And I do more just like individual portrait sessions. And a lot of the time I'm shooting inside, but if I go a good while with being busy, for some reason, everything ends up being really nasty, dirty. Cleaning it isn't too hard. You can clean your camera pretty easily on your own. However, I think that the suggestion of sending your gear in to be serviced is actually really worthwhile because you don't want your camera's shutter to break or something. Right. When you're in the middle of a season and you have, you know, however many shoots lined up for the next few weeks, you don't want to have to immediately go out and buy a camera just because you haven't taken the time to maintain your camera. Given a shutter blowing out is something that happens kind of towards what most people would consider the end of its life because it's so expensive to replace a shutter. But that's besides the point. Having having all of your gear serviced when you have the time to actually send it in, and usually the turnaround is not too bad on that. But even still, you know, being a few days without a piece of gear can be detrimental if you're busy. So that is definitely a great piece of advice there. Talking about the batteries and making sure that you're changing everything out, one piece that I would say is pretty important is to go through all of your memory cards and here's another area where I say labeling stuff is a good idea. Yeah. Beforehand. Well,
and let's point out that, you know, memory cards are a lot easier to label because there's like an actual place to label them.
They are made flat with a label on them. Yes. But just keeping track of your memory cards, I think the general wisdom with that is about 3 years that you can use a memory card before you're running into risks of having issues with corruption and things like that. I tend to try and only keep mine around in regular service for about a year and a half. Just because I'm a little bit paranoid. I have never had a card fail so far, and I do not want one. Mm-hmm. But especially for people like myself that shoot with SD cards, they have the little plastic prongs at the end that can kind of get worn and break as you're taking them in and out of your camera and putting them into your computer. CF cards tend to be a bit more sturdy when it comes to physical parts breaking off of them. But just take an assessment of what cards you have, if you need to get more, while you have the time to, because I mean, just taking a trip down to any kind of electronics store on a busy day is not something that you want to do.
Yeah.
So if you have the time to just make an assessment of what your memory looks like for all of your cameras.
And I don't know if we've ever really talked too much about it on this particular podcast. It's something that comes up all the time on the Improved Photography podcast. But one of the things that I do at the end of every year or the end of every season is I will go through and I will archive all of my old photos from the previous year. I will go into my Lightroom catalog. I'll find like, you know, the entire year's worth of senior photos that I'm not going to need access to anymore, probably ever. I will take all that stuff and I'll throw it on a server or some kind of backup hard drive and get it off of my main system. That way I've got kind of a clean, fresh slate to start with. And it's not taking up a bunch of space, because one of the problems I always run into is filling up hard drives with the amount that I photograph. Like I can fill up a hard drive fast, and it just slows everything down once you do that. So archiving the old stuff is something that I do at the end of every season.
Yeah, that's something that I think is a great idea. I tend to just do that by year, so I won't necessarily wait till the end of my busy season, which tends to be, you know, sometime in November. I'll still keep whatever last bits I shoot from November through December on that area. And then I just tend to archive everything. And it's amazing how easy it is to remember what year it is when you're looking at that year folder at the beginning of clicking into your images when a new year comes around. It's amazing how quickly work towards the end of the year feels very outdated and old, because you're like, I shot that in 2016 and it's, you know, January 10th. Of 2017. That happened to me this year, where I had something that I shot one of the last days of the year, and then very quickly I was like, I can't even post this in my portfolio because I shot it last year.
Yeah, last year. That's over 3 weeks old. That's old stuff. Yeah, man.
Like,
that's the old junk.
Can't show that. Like, I'm a new man now. That's just, it's, but yeah, archiving everything, and it's better to try and keep organized as things are coming in. But part of that, I also take the time to go through and tag stuff, which I'm pretty terrible about in general otherwise. Good. But I'll go through and at least put a couple of tags. So if in the future I need to go back and find stuff, I'm not looking at 2015-2-28 or something like that and trying to find the right folder that I had this one specific shoot in. I'll put names and general types of like business headshots, senior portrait, things like that in there. So it just makes it a little bit easier for me to search for older stuff and find it still.
Lightroom catalog organization is one of those things that when you're really busy, that's like one of the first things to get neglected.
Man.
My catalog just gets so messy when I'm busy, and I'm doing good just to keep up with my editing, let alone like all of the, you know, tagging and keywording and stuff, man, that's the first thing to go. But when I have a little bit more time, it's kind of nice to sit back and like do a little bit of organization in your catalog, and you feel so much better afterwards. It can really pile up though,
knowing that you can just find something. I mean, especially anybody doing just portrait sessions, if you do more than one in a day, just on import, I tend to change the name to all of my images on import to whatever the thing is. So the client's name or something like that. But when I've done two or three sessions in a day and it's my busy season and I'm slammed with stuff, it ends up just being like portrait shoots summer at this park instead of saying who it is. And that makes it harder for me to find stuff later on. So yeah, keeping track of stuff in the moment is definitely helpful, but when you have the time to, when you're not slammed with stuff, going back through your catalog and kind of tidying things up is an important thing to remember to do.
Yeah. And kind of getting back to the archiving stuff, one of the things that I will do is once a shoot is like a year old or 6 months old, and I'm confident that I delivered those photos a long time ago, they're content with them, I don't need to worry about the ones that I didn't deliver so much, I will go back and I will delete all of the photos that I did not deliver in the first place. At the very least for, like, you know, the family portraits and the senior portraits, not the stuff that is not quite so, you know, timely and important. Wedding stuff, like I wait a solid year before I delete anything from those. But
absolutely.
And that represents like 3/4 of my catalog oftentimes, because I'll take 3 shots of the same composition, only deliver one. So I can delete, you know, 2/3 of all the photos that I've taken the previous year just by going through and deleting all the ones that I didn't rate and I didn't deliver.
I can save
a lot of space.
And that's something that I have a tendency to forget about, even when I'm archiving stuff, because I just go through and sync across the board. So that's actually a good reminder that, hey, I have some time before my next session today. I should probably take care of that.
Oh, man. And there's nothing more gratifying than hitting delete on like 5 terabytes of photos, like that you're going to free up like 5 terabytes. It's just like crazy. You feel like it's a big deal. It's like a really good feeling.
Call that a panic attack for me. That sounds, I'd be like, okay, I'm going to do this. And I know that eventually there's going to be something where I'm like, oh, I forgot to flag that. And I was supposed to. But I mean, that's a part of this game of keeping stuff in a digital format and not having physical copies, is that inevitably you will lose some stuff that you would rather not
do. Right.
Which is why it's important to have good habits that you establish and have a standard throughout everything. Don't start flagging stuff 1, 2, and 3 for a while, and then doing pick and reject for a while, and then assigning color labels for a while. Make sure that you develop some sort of system to be able to keep your stuff organized, because then when it comes down to you deleting stuff, you know that you're not deleting anything that you really want to keep in the first place.
Yeah. For example, like a lot of times I don't even star rate any of my landscape photography. I'll star rate, you know, sports and portraits and weddings, but my landscape photography, like I never really even star rate those, because a lot of times I decide way after the fact what is a keeper and what's not a keeper. Yeah. Anyways, I don't want to, you know, paint myself into a corner that way. So for that very reason, I got to make sure that I'm not, you know, selecting an entire month's worth of photos and then realize, oh, I just deleted all of my landscape photos from May, you know? So you got to be careful about your organization. And when you are deleting things off of your hard drive, make sure that you're doing them like one day at a time. Don't select huge blocks of time and then hit delete when you can't, like, you know, double check yourself and make sure you're not deleting anything you don't want to delete.
Yeah, that's great advice. I mean, especially for me when I'm busy, it becomes really easy for me to cull a little bit faster than I would normally cull. And I end up rejecting photos that are actually worthwhile. So for me, when I'm doing any kind of tidying up like this, I'll just quickly thumb through everything without any filters on and just make sure that I haven't rejected something that could potentially be a keeper, because in the state of it, when I am just tired and I've already culled through, you know, 1500 images, it becomes pretty easy for me to just kind of make snap judgments about whether something's good or not without really looking at it. And there have been times that I've gone back through and gone, actually, this was a really good photo. I don't know why I got rid of this. Like, I should have delivered this to a client because it was worth delivering. So at least for considerations with portfolio work, any kind of shoot that you might want to include in a portfolio, I wouldn't just immediately delete anything that you think is bad at the time.
So this kind of ties into the other thing that I was hoping to talk about today, is because things are ramping up for us a little bit and we're getting a little bit more busy, it's kind of a good time of year to like start thinking about ways to speed up our workflows. I know I'm going through the process of editing only my second wedding of the year. I discover that I get a little bit rusty when it comes to the actual speed of editing a wedding.
Totally.
Towards the end of last year, I could bust through a wedding in, I don't know, probably 3 hours, 4 hours. And I've worked most of the day on this one already. It's just because I'm slower. So why don't we like give some of our favorite tips and advice for ways to work faster with our workflow, like when you're dealing with multiple images and stuff.
I think that that's a really great idea. My first one would be to figure out a culling system that is efficient for you. Mm-hmm. Everybody has slightly different ways of preferring to cull. But in general, at least for my first round, I tend to, because I'm doing portrait sessions for the most part, not weddings, I will do two or maybe even sometimes three culling rounds to find the final selects that I have. But when it comes to that, while it might take a little bit more time for me to go through three rounds of culling, by the end of it, I know for a fact that everything I am editing is like gold. It's everything that I would want a client to see. And then I have, if I promised a higher number of photos delivered, I have a filter for that where I can deliver quite a bit that's pretty good and then still highlight all of the best work. So I end up actually saving a lot of time by taking a little bit more time in my culling process because I have it refined for that three-phase culling. But any kind of culling system is really important mm-hmm. to refine and figure out what's going to work best for you. I know that you do a little bit different culling system than I do.
Yeah, I'm just black or white. Like I'm either going to deliver it or I'm not. And because I shoot so much and my whole business is kind of built around quantity rather than quality. And man, that stinks to say. Like I'm the Walmart of photography. I'm the McDonald's of photography. But anyways.
You're the McDonald's of photography if McDonald's was putting out like Red Robin quality burgers for...
Okay, so I'm the Red Robin of photography. I'm not sure that's a lot better, but anyways.
I would say that that's good. It's a quality burger that you can get anywhere.
Oh, all right. No,
that's
maybe bad. I'm like the Wendy's of photography. Anyways, so I'm black or white. Like I either do things 5 stars or no star, or I don't rate it at all. And I deliver everything that's 5 stars. And I edit everything that I deliver. So, but one of the things that's helped me save tons and tons of time is not using Lightroom for my culling anymore. Using Photo Mechanic to cull is just an amazing time saver. And I've been doing it pretty much any time that I have a lot of photos to go through. If it's just like a standard portrait session, I don't worry about it too much. You know, I'm only dealing with couple hundred photos, but when I'm dealing with, you know, shooting a game of some kind or shooting a wedding where I'm dealing with thousands of photos, it's amazing how much faster you can go through your photos. So I will go through Photo Mechanic, I'll rate all my photos, and then I will grab those rated photos and import them into Lightroom. And those will be the ones that I edit.
I have a little question for you, because while you were saying that, I thought of a great piece of advice that not everybody knows about. But in Photo Mechanic, is there a way to have it automatically advance to the next image after you've rated the one that you're on? Or are you constantly pressing the arrow key to move to the next image?
I'm constantly pressing the arrow key. And that's just because I'm used to it. And I think it's just as fast if you're used to it, because then it turns into a kind of a right, left thing, right? But I'm sure there is a way to do it just like there is in Lightroom. I just never taken the time to learn it.
Yeah. It's like the thing that I would suggest, I can't speak to anybody that uses Photo Mechanic, but I noticed mainly because I think that I have the slightest bit of carpal tunnel developing, and moving back with both my hands, it's just creating a bunch of extra fatigue that's unneeded on my hands. So something that I'll do for my first round, I do a flag or reject. So I either pick something or I reject it through my first pass. And for that, if you select the unflagged selection in Lightroom, whenever you pick it or reject it, it will remove it from that selection. So it automatically just goes through all of the images for you. Nice. Then after that, you can, you know, filter by just the picked images. And if you hit caps lock, as you press any kind of rating with that, it will just automatically advance it to the next photo. So my 3-round system, I'll do pick and reject, then 3, 4, 5, and then 6, 7, 8, which is red, yellow, and green. And then I'll flag everything that has been finalized as blue, which is a 9. But anyway, so I'll do the pick and reject, and then I'll just press my caps lock. And as I'm rating stuff 3, 4, and 5, all I have to do is set the rating and it automatically pulls up the next photo for me. So that's something that it's really tiny, but it's a good way to make sure that you are being efficient as much as possible, using as little physical movement as possible on your body, which ultimately adds up. It might take years.
Because that's what evolution is really all about, is eliminating physical activity of any kind. Right?
It's not eliminating physical activity. It's eliminating minor repetitive motions.
Yeah, because in doing that, you're eliminating at least half of your keystrokes, and that's a pretty big deal.
And so you're talking about reducing your time by in fractions of a second, but ultimately that will add up. And then that slight bit of tension that you have to have in your wrist to have two separate key movements with two hands is, that ends up putting strain on the body. And that's, as I said, probably just something that I'm noticing because my wrists aren't great. But it does end up being a bit of a lifesaver when I have a lot to go through.
Yeah, absolutely. Another thing that I like to do when I'm dealing with large numbers of photos that all were shot in the same lighting condition, like let's say, it's either a portrait session where I have the same light condition, same basic exposure and stuff. I will edit that first photo. I will sync all of those settings across all of those photos across the board. Mm-hmm. And then a lot of times I can just go through, I can skip to the next photo and I can use the plus and minus keys to get my exposure exactly right. And then, and then use the right arrow key to, go to the next photo. And there's huge, especially when you're editing a wedding or something, you can go through a huge number of photos really quickly that way, just by like, you skip to the next photo, you fix the exposure, go to the next photo, skip and fix the exposure. And as long as the white balance and all that stuff is consistent through all your photos, and you did a good job of processing that first photo, it's a really quick way of going through in batches. So a lot of times I will edit in chunks, like, I have this lighting scenario and this lighting scenario, and I'll edit each one kind of separately. And it's amazing how fast you can go through your photos just by fixing your exposure with your plus and minus keys.
That's a great suggestion there. Something that I will add on to that as, again, going back to the ergonomics of posture and the way that you're positioning, your arrow keys and your plus and minus keys tend to be really close to each other. So you have to sit in kind of a weird position with both of your hands in order to adjust plus and minus and then your arrow keys. So something that I've actually ended up doing, I do very much the same thing where I will sync across everything with most of my settings and then just adjust for exposure. But I've made one of the buttons on my Wacom tablet a next arrow key.
Oh, nice. That's
when good. When I'm in Lightroom, so I can keep my hands separate and they're in a much more natural position. It helps that I'm left-handed. So my right hand is over the right side of the computer keyboard for the plus and minus. And then my left hand just presses that button and I move on to the next one. So it's a lot of these little things that I think really help out with a workflow, is finding out the most efficient way to do the keyboard shortcuts and hotkeys and things like that. That can speed up your workflow a lot. Mm-hmm. And ultimately save you a lot of time that you can use for better things.
And another thing that, especially when you're doing like senior photos and blemish removal becomes a large chunk of your life, because let's face it, high school seniors don't have the best skin in the world. So you end up doing a lot of retouching. And I've learned that Lightroom is so slow and so not great with retouching that you end up saving a lot of time just by round tripping, going over into Photoshop just for your skin retouching, and then saving and going back into Lightroom. And it's crazy that it's so slow that you can go to another program, edit it there, and then save it and come back into that program and save time. It's actually faster to go to another program and then come back. But round tripping for my skin retouching has saved me tons and tons of time anytime that I'm having to retouch like every photo.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you there. And I mean, it's something that there are Lightroom brushes that can be pretty decent at doing retouching if you're okay with smoothing of skin. But in general, I think that's at least nowadays, common practice is say that you shouldn't smooth skin.
Yeah.
And to round trip into Photoshop, you don't even need to do like full on frequency separation, just doing some blemish removal using the healing brush tool.
The healing brush tool in Photoshop is just light years better than the one in Lightroom. Or did I say that right? Yes.
Yeah.
The one in Photoshop is light years better than the one in Lightroom. It's just crazy how much better it is. And it's instant, it's fast, and it just does a way better job.
Yeah. And something that I tend to rant about a lot is the differences between the quick healing and the healing brush tool. I personally like the healing brush over the quick healing, because the quick healing will automatically sample a texture that it thinks you want, similar to how Lightroom does that with their little blemish removal tool. I tend to prefer using just the regular healing brush tool because it allows me to option click a source that I like. Mm-hmm. And on my Wacom tablet, I just have my first little button be the option button. So I have real quick ability to sample, fill in a blemish, and it allows me to be a lot more precise about exactly where I'm filling, and there's no delay because it's not any content aware healing that's being done. You are telling it exactly what texture you want, so it doesn't have to think about what's the best thing. And that is, it's instantaneous, and that's great. One other thing is, if you're going to be doing this, if you round trip into Photoshop and you're trying to be speedy about everything, make sure that everything ends up on one layer. So even if you decide that you're going to add a blank layer to have some ability to go back and erase things if you go overboard, which I tend to recommend having any kind of non-destructive workflow like that. That's great, but it will increase your file size and it will triple the save time. Where if you, I have actually made a hotkey action for my computer, which is Command Option Q, to flatten the image, so I don't have to go right click flatten image. So I can do as heavy retouching, and when I'm finished with it, just have a quick little, I do Command Option Q and then Command S, and I'm done. I'm back over in Lightroom.
Absolutely. And learning those hotkeys can speed things up so much too, because like when I finish an edit, I'll flatten it and then I'll go Control S, Control W, and it closes it. And then I'm on to the next photo. And that way you're kind of going through all the different photos that you've opened up in Photoshop. It just automatically brings up the next one. You do your quick edit, Control S, Control W, you know, and you just keep going like that. And it's really fast.
I agree. I feel out of information right now. Is there anything else that you can think of that you would recommend for speeding up that workflow?
I mean, just keeping your computer running well. I think computer maintenance is one of those things that we probably should have put at the beginning, you know, when we're talking about spring cleaning. Like our workstations are super important to just our experience with our editing. And
absolutely.
And if you have full hard drives, it's going to be a very slow experience. So, you know, it's a great time to get those hard drives emptied off. Maybe occasionally, like, do a complete, you know, if you're a PC user like me, to do a complete, like, you know, refresh of Windows and start fresh. It's amazing how much better stuff runs when you do that occasionally.
Oh, yeah.
So at the beginning of every season, like, you know, just do a factory refresh and start clean and get those hard drives emptied out, and everything's going to run way faster too.
Totally. And something that I just remembered that I do have something else is, if you don't already have presets and actions and things like that, whether it be in Photoshop or in Lightroom, sorry, my dog just barked. if you don't have presets, actions, things like that in Lightroom or Photoshop, I would recommend doing that either. If you have a preset action that you really enjoy, or just creating actions and presets for things that you tend to do a lot, that ends up saving a lot of time. In Lightroom, I will actually separate everything. So I'll have like color toning as one set of presets, and then I'll have like the general contrast that I'll apply to things as a preset. So I can just click on the different things that I want for that initial image, adjust a little bit, because presets are never perfect. You have to play around with them a little bit. But I'll adjust it a little bit and then have a workable photo that I can sync across the board. And when it comes to Photoshop, my entire retouching workflow is something that I have. I made an action pack for that. I just go step 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, all the way through it.
It's like Connor in a box.
Yeah.
It's Connor's look in a box.
The easiest way for me to do what I do. And, you know, a lot of it still is like making simple decisions, but it's even when it comes to creating a blank layer that I title cleanup, just the amount of time that it takes to type in the word cleanup.
Yep.
Is it necessary? No, but it helps me have a reminder of exactly what this layer is for, because sometimes you'll create a blank layer that you're using uniquely for that individual image, and you don't want to get these mixed up with layer 1, layer 2, layer 3, and you go, well, what's each of these, and you have to go turn them on and off. So I like having stuff labeled, and anything that I will create on a consistent basis, even if it's just a blank layer, I will label it what it is and make an action for that, so it just automatically happens. It's pressing a button and it's named exactly the way that I want it to. So just thinking of little things like that that are going to help you save some time when it comes to being busy. Those little bits of time really matter.
When you're working in Lightroom with presets, organizing your presets so you don't end up with just like a left panel that is just like, you know, top to bottom full of presets, taking the time to organize them into separate folders and stuff, that can save you a lot of time.
Something
that I'll do is like when I'm processing a wedding, and let's say that I'm kind of doing a different style edit for this particular wedding or whatever, I'll usually have three or four different looks. Like I'll have my, you know, black and white style. I'll have a couple different color styles. I will create those presets just for that wedding. I'll put them in their own folder. That way I have access to them right here, and I'm not distracted by all those other presets, and I'm not going to have to like scroll through and try to find them.
I think that's great advice. I mean, especially just even in Photoshop, in the action panel of Photoshop, you can right click and have it in button mode. And button mode's really nice because you don't have to click on the preset and then play the action to have it happen. You just click on it and it will automatically do that action. Nice. But when you create actions, you can actually color, like tag them with different colors. So I will have different setups. So I have my retouching is all whatever green, and things that are color toning can be purple, or things that are warm color toning are going to be orange, whatever it may be. And having those can really help you keep everything organized. And another little tip that often doesn't get thought about is that you can actually create blank actions that don't do anything, that don't have a name, and use that as a spacer in between your different action packs. Nice. Just so you really have a distinguishing difference between one and the other. So I'll have an uncolored label in between everything else. So between my retouching buttons and my color toning buttons, I have just a nice little blank separator that helps me break it up even more.
That's awesome.
By that. Yeah.
Sweet. I feel like we could probably go on about this later. But I mean, every little thing helps. And if it's something that you do often and repeatedly, either create a preset or create an action for it, because you are totally going to save time.
Inevitably. And it's one of those things that can be really easy to just let it slide for a while. But eventually when you're in the thick of it, like I'll get just tired. Every preset that I've ever made has been because I'm just like, I do this so much. Why am I doing this? Like I need just a preset for it. And then I have it and I'm like, oh, this is really nice and convenient. Yeah. I like having that from here on out. Yeah.
You have to get a little bit mad before you take the time to create an action or a preset.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, Nick, thank you very much for joining me this week. It was awesome talking with you. I hope everybody out there listening enjoyed our kind of rambly, long stories and everything else. But it was really fun talking with you, man.
Yeah, I need to make more time for the show. I haven't been on nearly enough.
You know, you're a busy guy, and for good reason. Everybody who has seen your work realizes that work probably means you're in pretty high demand. Not to mention you have like a family and stuff, which is kind of important as well.
Yeah. Sometimes I do that too. Sometimes.
Well, thank you very much for listening, and we will talk to you in another 7 days. Bye-bye.
The views expressed on this program by independent hosts, guests, and callers do not necessarily reflect the views of Improved Photography LLC or its advertisers. Some links mentioned on this program are affiliate links where a commission is earned.